Number one, stocks go down. Two, everybody, we have been over that. Number two, prices go up, which I understand is kind of a novel concept. From American Public Media, this is Market Class. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Wednesday today, the 12th of May. Good as always to have you along, everybody. So, where would you like to start? The lousy day on Wall Street or the inflation numbers that everybody except maybe Wall Street knew were coming? All right, that's a trick question. We are going to start with inflation because even though we knew it was coming, there are some observations to be made and context to be had. The observation goes like this. When you were talking year-over-year numbers, as many of the headlines are today, of course consumer prices were up 4.2%, and of course it's the biggest year-on-year jump since the Great Recession. Think for a second about how lousy things were a year ago, and think of how much consumer demand is out there right now. But you dig into the numbers a little bit, as we like to do around here, looking at changes in consumer prices just since March of this year, and you might want to sit up a bit and pay attention. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore takes us through the data and the context.
Let's start with car rental prices.
I think the technical term for it is just crazy.
Paul Ashworth is chief North America economist with Capital Economics. The cost of renting a car went up 16% in a month.
Car rental prices are now almost 50% above where they were before the pandemic.
Airfare up 10%. Lodging up 8%. In a month, Tom Graff is a portfolio manager at Brown Advisory.
Look, I think that tells you that there's a lot of pent-up demand for travel, right? I think we're all tired of the same four walls.
A lot of things increased in price more than expected, from communications to apparel. But if there is something in this economy that can take you somewhere else, it is probably on fire. Used car prices up 10% in a month. Joanne Feeney is a partner at Advisors Capital Management.
And that 10% increase in used car prices is a reflection of the shortage of new cars available from the producers.
Now that right there, that shortage of cars, that is not just too many people wanting a car. That is a supply chain issue. A global semiconductor shortage is stunting the supply of cars. The pandemic screwed with a lot of supply chains. The lumber supply chain, the bike supply chain at one point. What consumers want, supply chains sometimes cannot give just yet. And so prices are rising. But
if you look at the price levels of a number of these components, airfares, lodging away, they're still pretty well below where they were pre-COVID.
Matt Luzzetti is chief U.S. economist for Deutsche Bank.
But this is not even making up for the shortfalls and the decreases that we saw last year.
At least in some sectors. But the burning issue here isn't just that we had wacky inflation for a month. Again, Joanne Feeney.
And so the real question is, are these price increases temporary, as the Fed has told us to expect? Or is there more persistence here that we need to worry about?
That's kind of an open question, and it might get worse before it gets better. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, again, they knew it was coming, not quite sure what the freakout was. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. We've come now to the behavioral economics portion of the program with the subheading Incentives Matter. According to the Centers for Disease Control, just a bit more than 46% of the entire U.S. population, that's everybody, has gotten at least one dose of a COVID vaccine. 35% is fully vaccinated. But things are slowing down. Millions of people are still hesitant, and herd immunity is, for now, maybe not looking so great. So local governments are partnering with businesses to offer free stuff in exchange for getting a shot. Incentives matter, that we know, but do they work? Marketplace's Kristen Schwab has more on that.
The mission to get more vaccines into people's arms is starting to take on a bit of an Oprah Winfrey vibe. West Virginia is giving $100 savings bonds to adults under 35. Maine is offering free hunting and fishing licenses. And in New Orleans, a pound of crawfish.
Incentives are nice because they're the carrot approach. They're leading people toward something in a positive way.
Noel Brewer researches vaccination behavior at the University of North Carolina. He says incentives appeal to people across party lines, and studies show they increase vaccine uptake by about 8% if the incentive is of value. Mario Machis is a behavioral economist at Johns Hopkins.
There are costs and benefits to any action, and a person engages in the action if her perceived benefits exceed her perceived costs.
Costs can be literal, like transportation to and from a vaccination site. The Biden administration has partnered with Uber and Lyft to provide free rides. But benefits can also offer people something they want. New Jersey is running a shot in a beer program. Machis says this can make a needle in the arm seem fun.
Because, you know, they might go with a friend or a group of friends and get vaccinated together and then go out and get their free beer.
And incentives like New York's free tickets to a Mets or Yankees game also whisper freedom. Like, hey, remember when we high-fived strangers after home runs without fear? Gretchen Chapman, who studies vaccine behavior at Carnegie Mellon, says incentives usually work on people who only need a little push. And researchers don't know if they'll work for the COVID vaccine like they have for others. But
we're at the point where there's going to be no one intervention that's going to meet everyone who hasn't vaccinated yet.
So governments will continue to increase accessibility and attractiveness until, experts say, they move to create mandates where they can. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
Childcare has been one of the big stories of this pandemic, as you know. Daycares closing and school going remote has really complicated things for a lot of people. Might not be quite as obvious, but with the school year ending soon, remote though it may be, summer camp is part of that discussion as well. Most of those camps were closed last summer. Many are opening back up this year with some extra guidance from the CDC. So we have gotten Kevin Nissen on the phone. He is the co-director of Friendly Pines. That's a sleepaway camp in Prescott, Arizona. Mr. Nissen, welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So what are you looking at for Friendly Pines this coming summer? You guys going to be busy?
We are going to be very busy. The pent-up demand is through the roof for summer camp. So added that large population of kids along with a whole host of new procedures that we've never done in 80 years. It's going to be a busy summer.
I bet it is. And I apologize for chuckling. But, you know, pent up demand is something you hear in you know, industrial contexts and consumers looking for retail stuff. You don't hear it much for summer camp. But I imagine after last summer when none of these parents could ship their kids off and you couldn't employ a bunch of people, there's real eagerness in getting as many kids in those bunkhouses as they can.
I've never seen anything like it. I've been here for just about 40 years, and our wait lists are long. The closest thing I've ever seen to this was after 9/11, when parents decided they weren't going to travel, they weren't going to go on vacation, so everybody went to summer camp. So it's just been through the roof.
I bet. So let me run you through a couple of things here that go along with pent-up demand. Number one, you need counselors when you got a lot of campers. How's your hiring going?
That is our biggest challenge right now. In the last week, we have seen more applications, but we don't have access to international staff, which us comprised about 20% of our staff every year. We don't have that this year, so all of our staff are domestic.
How are you going to get them then? I mean, are you bumping up pay? What are you doing?
We pay fairly high to begin with, so we thought that would take care of the problem. Because of Arizona's minimum wage laws, we pay about $630 a week, which is extremely high for a summer camp. But even that, the number of applications just aren't what they used to be. So a lot more advertising, being a lot more aggressive. You know, normally you just waited for it to come to you, but now you have to go out after it.
All y'all open soon, right? Are you going to be able, when you open the doors, are you going to be staffed and are you going to be ready?
We feel as though we are. Okay. Our staff arrive next Monday. And then our first campers arrive May 29th. Now, that's a small camp, so we're ready for that. But as we get through the summer, our groups get a little bit bigger. So I could see us hiring right up until the day that kids get here, and even hiring supplemental staff throughout the summer.
Last thing, sir, and then I'll let you go. I understand that this is going to be your last year at Friendly Pines after something like 40 years, and after a lost summer last year, which I imagine you, as many other small businesses, got through by, you know, hanging on by your fingernails. How are you feeling? I mean, you leave this job after 40 years. That's got to be something.
That's a good question. I imagined that this year, my last year, I've trained staff to take over my position. I thought this year would be easy, you know, hanging around with the kids. But I'm faced with a big challenge. And on the one hand, it does give me a greater sense of purpose to make sure that we not only reach our 80th summer, but the 81st summer is something that's going to happen as well. So I've taken it in that vein.
Well, best of luck to you, Mr. Nissen. That's Kevin Nissen. He's the co-director of Friendly Pines there in Prescott, Arizona. Take care, sir. Have a good day.
Oh, thank you very much.
Coming up.
Pink is the color right now. Dusty pink, bubblegum pink, magenta pink.
I mean, who knew, right? First, though, let's do the numbers. Yeah, the Wawa's for sure. Dow Industrial's down 681 today, 1.9%, closed at 33,587. The NASDAQ shed 357 points, 2 6/10, ended things at 13,031. The S&P 500 off 89 points, 2 1/10%, finished at 4,063. Tech stocks led the slump. Netflix dimmed 2%. Amazon gave back 2 2/10%. That's the reopening trade right there. Apple down 2.4%. Housing firms took a hit. Toll Brothers rang down 6 6/10%. Lennar subtracted 7%. D.R. Horton reduced 7 2/10%. I'm going to guess number one, lumber, and number two, mortgage rates with inflation. I don't know. Energy companies had a good day. ExxonMobil crept up about 0.5%. Chevron improved 0.6%. Today, as people prepare to travel, once again, J.D. Power released its annual North American Airline Satisfaction Study. Any guesses who's on top? Delta, then Southwest, then Alaska. Bond prices down. Yield on the 10-year T-note up to 1.69%. You're listening to Marketplace. From stimulus bills to Reddit and the stock market, Marketplace has helped you get to the bottom of some wild economic stories this year. You know, donations from listeners power our nonprofit news. Your gift will support the journalism that keeps you and thousands of others informed every single day. So please make your gift at marketplace.org/donate. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. One of the things you got to talk about when you talk about inflation for real, as Sabri was earlier, and whether it's transitory or not, that inflation, you got to talk about a thing called the pricing power. Just like it sounds, companies having the ability, the power, to raise prices. And as it happens, Procter & Gamble and Kimberly-Clark and a bunch of other companies have or are expected to announce price increases on a huge range of products. But you got to be careful when you go looking for pricing causation. Greg Portels at Carney's Global Consumer Practice.
It's less about power right now because it's more about necessity.
Because
there's broad acknowledgement that input costs are going up and they're going up for everyone.
Input costs. We have talked about those a lot this week. Sarah House, she's an economist at Wells Fargo, says you got to talk about consumers, though, too.
Businesses have been able to pass those costs on because end demand has been so strong.
Go on.
As businesses think prices are going to rise further, they actually try and get out ahead of those increases and oftentimes raise prices.
Another factor, House says, wage growth.
It's not so much that businesses are experiencing higher wage costs and then they raise prices. They actually tend to raise prices before they actually see those wage costs pick up.
We are a long ways from knowing whether inflation is going to stick around past, say, this summer. But as long as it does, a lot of companies are going to have that pricing power. We talked not infrequently on this program about how the pandemic just made things go faster, except maybe time, but some trends definitely accelerated. Already growing consumer preferences for streaming movies and food delivery services and e-commerce, they all got a huge boost. But there is some new government data showing there is one trend the pandemic actually reversed: people deciding to retire. For decades, the retirement rate in this economy had been falling pretty steadily. At least it was till last year. From the Workplace Culture Desk, Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino is on that one.
Chuck Harris and his wife Karen of Jackson, Wyoming, weren't really planning to fully retire at age 66 last year, but when the clinic where he worked as a physician's assistant shut down and concerns about COVID made her job as a phlebotomist risky, they decided to go for it.
We didn't need to work and haven't need to work. Our needs aren't great. We're not big spenders. So we've had virtually no financial impacts.
But people like the Harrises have been delaying retirement in recent decades, says Alicia Minnell, the director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College.
People are healthier, jobs are less demanding. For lower income people, it's probably necessity.
But the pandemic has changed the calculus around when to stop working, says Jed Kolko, a labor economist with the job site Indeed. Some people have faced layoffs and health concerns, while others have seen their wealth grow from real estate and stock appreciation. But Kolko says the census survey doesn't ask people why they retired.
Nor do we know about how wealthy they were or what their income levels were right before they retired. But we can take some guesses.
He says the increase in retirements came earlier in the pandemic, before the economy rallied. They were also more likely among workers without a college degree. All of that suggests these retirements weren't because people were feeling wealthy, but because of job losses or health concerns.
A year from now, we might see that this slight increase in retirement rates turns out to be a blip.
He says it now looks like the labor market is heating up. More opportunities and higher wages could lure some retired folks back to work. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Everything you need to know to start your business and economic day can be had on the Marketplace Morning Report. David Brancaccio and the gang. Check it out. Now that we're going more places, as we're getting more vaccinated, back to the office maybe, or a vacation, or a wedding, or something social, we're buying more clothes. And after a year plus, the options that are presented, the choices that consumers have, can be a lot. What you might not think about, though, are the choices that retailers have already made for you, and how that is all tangled up with them predicting how you are going to feel about the world down the road. In this latest edition of our series, How We Shop, Marketplace's Mario Segarra went to the Short Hills Mall out in New Jersey.
I meet Sean Grain Carter in the shoe department at Nordstrom. She's wearing a calf-length navy blue dress and white-rimmed glasses with a red purse, perfectly manicured nails, and a mask. I can tell by her eyes that she's smiling.
Hello! How are you?
Nice to meet you.
It's a pleasure.
Grain Carter is a professor at the Fashion Institute of Technology in Manhattan, where she trains students to become buyers. Buyers make purchasing decisions for a retailer. How many dresses to stock, or tops, or shorts, in which patterns and colors. She comes to the mall a lot, and she looks at things a little differently than the rest of us.
So let's start over in this section here.
Immediately, she spots a dress. It's long and loose-fitting, with pastel stripes, blue, green, and a shade of pink that's apparently hot this year.
It's what I call a blush pink. And as you can see, it's in a print. But you're also going to see it showing up as a solid.
She looks around and then makes a beeline for another dress, turquoise with pink flowers.
I know that this is a bestseller. There's only two sizes left in this dress, where as you see...
She points to the dress next to it.
All the sizes are here in this one.
Green Carter used to be a buyer for Bergdorf Goodman and Ann Taylor. She says buyers look at trends from fashion shows. They think about what's going on in the world. They look at the retailer sales, and they gather intel on the ground.
Every time I come to the mall, I'm looking, and I know what's working, what's not. I also look at customer shopping bags.
Next, we head to Neiman Marcus. At the entrance, a few mannequins stand on a lime green area rug. One has a flower behind its ear, another in its hand. They're wearing brightly colored dresses, orange, yellow, green, and pink.
Look at this dress, which is a color block. This color block dress is very 60s.
At a different store, I see a shirt that says, "Feeling optimistic" in a 60s era font. The 60s references, the bright colors, Green Carter says they're all sending a message. The sun's out, the skies are blue, it's been such a tough year, don't you deserve a little happiness? She walks over to a rack and picks up a crop top with poofy sleeves.
And so here's an example of another bestseller. This little top, it's gone. This is all that's left. And it's in pink and green with cute little mini florals. This is a happy, happy purchase.
Our next stop is Anthropology. And the first thing we see is a mannequin wearing an eyelet dress. They're usually white. Imagine a lace tablecloth in dress form. We've seen a few already. This one is bright yellow.
I call it sunflower yellow. It looks just like a sunflower. So now you know this is a trend.
We're seeing a lot of the same trends over and over. Anthropology has a pink floral top with poofy sleeves, like the one we saw at Neiman Marcus. And that eyelet dress also comes in, wouldn't you know it, pink.
So pink is the color right now. Dusty pink, bubblegum pink, magenta pink. They're saying we believe in pink.
Why is it that all these stores believe in the same colors and silhouettes and patterns?
They consult what we call fashion services.
Like there's one called WGSN. It predicts what people are going to be feeling 2 years from now and translates those themes into colors. For 2023, it sees emotions that seem kind of opposed, numbness and hope. And it's advising retailers to bet on clothing and accessories in honeycomb yellow, jade green, and dark oak. Right now, retailers seem to have settled on pink, which I tell Green Carter, I take issue with. Pink's not my color. She doesn't miss a beat.
You could get it in white. We're going to always have it in white and black for you.
But then we get to Loft, and this funny thing happens. I see another eyelet dress, but this time in a kind of peachy pink.
Here we go, pink again. I actually like this one, though. It's more of a...
Oh, see, you like. You know what? Your eye is getting used to it.
She says, this is kind of what happens. We see a style over and over. Maybe our family and friends are wearing it, and we come around. There's something else at work here, too. Retailers have long pushed the idea that if you buy that pink eyelet dress, you will feel good, happy, alive again. After the past year, a lot of us want to believe that. Before we leave the mall, Green Carter points down to her feet. She's wearing her own post-vaccine feel-good purchase, a pair of black Gucci sandals. I'm Marielle Segarra for Marketplace.
Hey, help us out. Would you tell us how you shop for clothes? There's a place you can do that at marketplace.org. This final note on the way out today, help wanted, and this is true, Colonial Pipeline, of which we have heard a lot in the past week, has a job opening for a manager in its cybersecurity shop. It was posted more than a month ago, and item number one in position responsibilities, develops, validates, and maintains an incident response plan and processes to address potential threats. So there's that. Average gallon of gas today, by the way, topped $3 a barrel. We should say That is mostly because consumers in the Southeast appear to be buying more gas than they can actually use, which in turn led to this tweet from the Consumer Product Safety Commission today. And again, this is true. The Consumer Product Safety Commission actually had to go out and say, do not fill plastic bags with gasoline. All right, we got to go, but here is your moment of economic context. The good old 10-year treasury note is where we go for this one. I mentioned in the numbers, the yield on the 10-year closed up at 1.69% today in response to the aforementioned inflation fears. Here, once again, because this is what we do, is some context. Last January, before the pandemic, the yield on the 10-year was at 1.69%. And right now, at 1.69%, the yield is about half of where it was back in 2018. So now you know. Our media production team includes Brian Allison, Robin Edgar, Drew Jostad, Garrett Lang, Jeff Peters, Jay Siebold, Liana Squilacci, Charlton Thorpe, Juan Carlos Torado, and Becca Weinman. They're coming in so the rest of us don't have to. Those are the rules. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.